MC. I'm Mike Buongiorno, joined once again by my shipmate, Mr. Vin Forte.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. We just got off last week's episode of Star Trek II.
The Wrath of Khan.
The Wrath of Khan, a classic.
Yes.
And now we get to talk, it's a privilege.
Yes.
An honor that we get to talk about The Search for Spock. A significant downgrade.
Directed by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. I don't blame him because he directed the next movie, which was significantly better.
And he went on to direct. He directed a lot. He went on to do a lot of things. I think he directed Three Men and a Baby.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of stuff. But I will say there are some direction problems with this movie. The tone is all over the place, and he should have had a better grasp on that. He also should have put a little bit of a lid on Shatner.
Yeah.
Shatner goes way over the top in this movie.
That he does.
In this movie, let's give the credits. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock from 1984, 2 years after the previous film. We've got Leonard Nimoy, the director. It's written by Harve Bennett. One guy writing it who worked on the last movie. Yeah. In this movie, Savick is recast. It's no longer Kirstie Alley. It's Robin Curtis.
At that time, she was in Cheers at that point. So
Kirstie Alley?
Was she?
Whoa.
I believe she had just taken over for Shelley Long.
Okay. So there's lots of reasons. So people have said there was conflicts. People have said one very pervasive rumor is that she asked for a crazy amount of money and they said no.
Yeah.
But some have also said that Shatner didn't like her, and Nimoy was like, I don't want to hear it. Like, Nimoy just recast her because he just didn't want to hear Shatner's fucking mouth.
I believe that.
Which is Shatner, many people don't like Shatner. Although, what we know now about Kirstie Alley is she's not a fucking angel herself.
Yeah, no, well, she is an angel now.
Oh boy. Or not.
Or not. Maybe who she's knows? Down there. We don't know. She could be a devil.
She's dead is the point. Remember Fat Actress, by the way?
Yes, but I doubt a lot of other people do.
There was a time, what was it, 2005, 2004?
Well, that's like a long string of like everyone trying to get into the Curb Your Enthusiasm game.
Right. Let's do an unscripted show where I'm playing me, but a shitty version of me.
Yeah. That, the Paul Reiser show was a bad one.
Yes. Howie Mandel had one.
Oh, How We Do It?
Yes, there was and hers was called Fat Actress because she was old. She was famous, but then she was in the tabloids because she gained a lot of weight, and she was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna make this work for me." So she made a show called Fat Actress about how she's fat and how like her career wasn't good anymore.
But like, wasn't this also a case of like she wasn't really that fat?
She was just she was fat, but she was just a person. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We treat like a celebrity getting fat like you know, some horrible tragedy.
Like, remember when people got on Pierce Brosnan's wife? Like, there was some photos that leaked. It was like the early days of social media where people just saw images of like him at the beach with his wife. And his wife, like, wasn't fat, wasn't even like what you would consider like, she just had like hips.
Yeah.
And like a waist and stuff. But they were like, oh my God, you believe Pierce Brosnan's wife? And it was also like a super unflattering photo. Like if you just look at her normally, well, you're like, oh, she's a nice lady.
I always feel bad for, you know, a lot of times in marriages, if one of them becomes famous, the marriage breaks up, which is sad. But then there were the cases where they love each other and the marriage stays strong, but the public is hard on the spouse because they're like, oh, this person's a movie star and they're with you. And it's like, maybe they love that person. Something similar is, what's his name? Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman's wife is older than him.
Yeah.
And now that he's kind of an older guy, she looks older than him. And a lot of people make fun of her or that. And it's like, well, but they've been together for a long, long time. Like, maybe, you know, you're an asshole.
Yeah. Like, remember, and this marriage actually didn't last, but remember when you found out that Christina Hendricks was married to the guy from Super Troopers? The, like, thin guy who's like, I'm freaking out, man.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
And everyone, like, was, like, dunking on her. And it's like, well, fuck, he's the lucky one. What are we talking about?
Right.
If she loves it and he's clearly married to one of the most beautiful women of the past 20 years.
Yeah, like, I know.
Like, what are we dunking on?
It's weird. But anyway, Kirstie Alley's not in this movie.
Robin Curtis is.
And I don't think people shit on Robin Curtis, but I think the writing betrays Savick more than her performance betrays Savick.
Yeah, she does a good Vulcan performance.
Like, right. She's put in the background. She was in the foreground in part two, and now she's like on a side mission and with David, who again is not Mr. Charisma.
Well, three also kind of feels like a side mission.
Three is it feels like an overlong episode of a TV show.
It feels like if you take out some of the more notable factors, like okay, this is like the return of the Klingons, like in the film series, and that even though I don't care about it, like his son dying. If you take, like, and obviously Spock coming back.
Right.
Like, if you take those elements out of it, it feels more just like an epilogue to The Wrath of Khan.
Right. Yeah. It but a worse one because it looks a lot worse.
Yeah.
The it's very flat looking. Like, it looks like TV or bad TV. TV of the time period. Now TV looks great. But, like, it looks like TV. It looks like the old show in some, like... And I was saying the last episode, one of the interesting things you could do is look at two and look at three because they were filmed very close to each other with a lot of the same sets, a lot of the same actors,
and
a lot of the
like
same...
super dynamic.
Yeah, and in this, like, everyone's sort of standing next to each other. They don't really get into the action in terms of cinematography. The lighting's all bad. The interior of the Enterprise looks awful. It's so overlit compared to the way it looks in one and two where it looks really cool and it's like... Boy, this does not look great.
Yeah, the whole thing just feels, again, like I watched this, I watched it fairly fresh. I watched it this morning.
Yeah.
And even with that, I got through it, and I'm kind of just like, I might as well not watch it, because I have the same exact thoughts of what I saw it, like, years ago.
Well, you know what I too watched it this morning. You know what I realized? One of the reasons why it feels like such a slog is because the audience is way ahead of the characters in the movie for most of it.
Right, because we know what the end game is.
Right, we know Spock's coming back. We know that Bones is the person who has Spock's memory inside of him, not Kirk. We know what's going to happen. Like, we kind of, like, get to it. Like, we're so ahead of the characters. You know, the characters are sitting around going, oh, what are we going to do? What is this?
Meanwhile, like, the last movie, like you made a point to say, like, oh, a lot of it's from Savick's point of view in the last movie. And that was cool because as Savick, like, we don't know what's coming next.
Right.
Like, Wrath of Khan has all these moments where it's like, well, how are they going to get out of this?
Right.
This one, it's like, I don't really care how they're going to get out of it because we know they're going to get out of this.
Right. I mean, maybe, see, it was all marketed on Spock, but maybe if it hadn't been called Search for Spock... And the whole Spock thing were genuinely a surprise. It would have been more interesting. But, you know, we know... First of all, the movie begins with showing Spock's death again. Like, last time on Star Trek. So we see that all
again. Which I guess you
had
to do back then.
Right, because, you know...
People can't just pop in there. I mean, they had VHS, but you can just...
Right.
Like, nowadays, if they did something like that... Like, Marvel does it all the time, where it's like, we don't feel like we need to hold your hand. Because,
right, exactly.
Like, you know it. You've got it.
So they do that, which is fine, but that's the thing. Like, there's nothing else going on here. Even the Klingon villain, Krug, who's played by Christopher Lloyd, who I think does a good job.
Does a good job, but, like, it's nowhere kind of near as compelling as the Klingon villain from Six.
Or the last villain from Khan. Like, Khan from 2 is such a good villain. This guy's just a shittier Khan. And really, you could cut him out. It's almost like he's tacked on to the story.
Yeah, watching this, the one big thing I did have that I hadn't really thought of before was, is this movie would have been much better off if they somehow got to the Spock stuff like a quarter of the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Spock's back with the crew, and it becomes like a Klingon movie.
Yeah.
Where, like, you don't even call it Search for Spock. You call it, like, I don't know, like, the return of the enemy or something. Like,
do like what they
focus on the Klingons coming back.
Do like what they did with Return of the Jedi and make the first sequence about getting Spock back, the way they got Han back.
Yeah.
And then we had the rest of the story. Like, if you're going to be very obvious that Spock coming back, do it quick. You know what I mean? That's what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, this is directed by Nimoy, so it gave him a chance to focus on directing and not really be in it that much. And there's this thing that happens where so David, who is David Marcus, the son of Captain Kirk, who he only just recently had a relationship with, he's on a different ship with Savick. And they were supposed to have a romantic thing, but it was cut out.
Yeah, and it's clear, like, they were supposed to have a romantic, because they're on the same ship, like, right, kind of having a thing.
Right. Like, it would make sense if they did, but they don't. So they go down to Genesis because they see that there's some...
It's a life
right
there.
Which there shouldn't be yet, right? So they go, and it's Spock's, you know, the torpedo that they put him in.
Yeah.
And they open it up. Well, there's these, like, microbes that are growing. That's the first...
He's there, but he's not the Spock we know. He's aging, but he's aging fast now.
Right. He's, like, they find him, and he's a little kid.
Yeah.
There's, like, five or six different young actors who play Spock up until the end.
Yeah, and he's not real... I mean, he is Spock, but
he don't have the memories.
Yeah, he doesn't have his soul.
Right. And so one of the ways... that 3 betrays 2. Well, obviously the big way is bringing Spock back. Yeah. But another big way that 3 betrays 2 is that 2 has this idea of Genesis, this huge power to really create life. To science has finally gotten us to the point of playing God. We can terraform uninhabitable planets and make life there. And in this movie, the Genesis planet is fucking up. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. And then Savick's like, what happened? And then David's like, all right, I cut a few corners when I was putting it together. My bad. I fucked up. I used proto-matter. And she's like, proto-matter is not allowed because of how volatile it is. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. So even the one thing we knew about David was he's a scientist.
Yeah, and he wants to do things by the book. And
right.
Like,
now science. That's taken away. Yeah. He's bad at being a scientist. And this beautiful concept that we made you think about in the last movie, we're just going to undo it now. We're going to fuck it up. We're going to say that it's growing too quickly, and that's affecting Spock, so Spock is growing with it.
Right.
Which, by the way, explain to me, how would they have brought Spock back had that not happened? Because his body is dead. Like, Spock's father is in this movie. The same... what's his name?
Sarek.
Same guy who played him in the show. Okay, he comes back, and he goes up to Kirk, and he's like, how could you leave Spock like that? He trusted you, and blah, blah, blah. Again, it takes too long for them to know what we know, which is that Spock put his sort of spirit, his soul, into someone else. Mm-hmm. The father thinks it's Kirk, but we all know it's Bones, and we're like, all right, it's Bones. Let's get to it. It's Bones. Yeah. We already saw a scene where Bones was acting like Spock in Spock's room. So why is this a mystery to anybody? But anyway, that takes way too long. And, I just lost my train of thought.
We're talking about David and the Genesis Project. But while that's going on, Bones is acting erratic.
Yeah.
And people are wondering, like, Bones is acting kind of weird. But like you said, it's very clear the way he's acting.
Right.
Like, he's acting because he's got what they call his Cal Ra?
Oh, Bon Par
No, that's
right. That's what I was getting to. How would the plot work if not for the Genesis? Because when Spock's dad comes to him, he says basically, oh, Spock's body's dead, but his spirit is alive in you. Turns out he's alive in Bones. But okay, and he says, okay, you could come to Vulcan and go up on the mountain and do this ritual. But if Spock's body's dead, how do you bring him back? Because they make it like Spock being reborn and growing up very, very fast on Genesis is a mistake. It's something that's happening because of Genesis.
Right.
Am I missing something or is it a plot hole?
I don't know if it's a plot hole. I think it's a plot convenience that the two threads are colliding in this movie. So they don't have to explain what would happen. Right. If
like, where would you put Spock?
Right.
So, well, okay. So that, yeah. So
we're to assume that.
Yeah.
Sarek just like he knows about what's going on at the Genesis planet, which he does, and
right. We find out it's weird because in some ways this is right after two, but then also we find out that on their way back from the mission, the world, everyone, not the world, but the galaxy, everyone knows about Genesis, and it's this big political thing. People are on different sides of it. Mm-hmm. Again, an interesting thing that they kind of undo.
Yeah.
It's sort of taboo. When Kirk finds out that he can go back to the Genesis planet and maybe get Spock's body and bring him back, the head of the Federation's like, no one's off limits. No one's allowed to go to the Genesis planet, which is where one of the interesting things about this movie is, Kirk steals the Enterprise and just goes, and throws his whole career away in. An incredibly unthrilling, unexciting chase scene, kinda, where he slowly backs out
of space.
Like
dock.
Homer Simpson in the bush, he slowly backs the Enterprise.
Just like, wait,
what's
going on
with that Enterprise? Wait a second. Yeah, they steal it, but they're in the space station. And there's door, like, so the door, they're like, oh, they're going to open the doors. But again, everything's moving so slow. It's just not very exciting. And, Kirk's got a cool leather jacket in this one.
He does.
Again, with the collar popped. So he loves
it.
You gotta
let people
collar.
Know who's king of the ship here.
Who's the captain around here?
Yeah.
Guy with the pop collar, that's who. Yeah, they steal the ship. So they kind of have like a skeleton crew. Not, you know, it's just the main people.
Right.
There's no one else on. And we have this throwaway line in the beginning that all the cadets from part two were assigned to different ships. Okay. I don't know why. All
right.
We're also told, again, this is something that they do and then back off in the next movie. We're told by the head of the Federation that the Enterprise is 20 years old. We have newer, better ships. It's time to decommission the Enterprise. We're not going to repair it after what happened in 2. We're just going to retire the ship. And Kirk and the whole crew is upset about it. But don't worry. We're going to completely undo that next time.
Yeah.
And we're going to destroy the ship in this movie, which is interesting. But just like Spock dying, it doesn't mean much. It
doesn't mean much because he's going to get a new ship.
And then we do it again. Was it First Contact or Generations? When do they in the next gen movies the ship
gets
destroyed?
Well, in the next gen movies the ship is destroyed at the end of Generations.
Generations.
But then, pretty much in every subsequent film, like something like happens to the ship.
The ship gets destroyed a lot now.
The ship gets destroyed a lot now.
Right. So you've got a Klingon bad guy, which is good. This is the first movie with a Klingon bad guy. I mean, there have been Klingon characters, right?
Right. But this is the first one, because it's the third one, where we've got an actual Klingon bad guy.
Right. John Larroquette as one of the Klingons.
Yeah.
Which is, this is movie comes out the same year that Night Court begins. So, and probably...
His launchpad.
Yes. I'm trying to think... Is John Larroquette, you've seen Stripes. Is John Larroquette in Stripes or am I misremembering
it? Oh, I feel like I've heard that before.
Because I'm thinking he's the bad guy in Stripes. Let me look it up. The Bill Murray movie from 1981. Yes, John Larroquette is the bad guy in Stripes. So I guess that was his biggest thing as the bad guy in Stripes. But you can barely tell that it's him as this like third banana Klingon. Christopher Lloyd is doing good. Apparently at the time it was a real... It was a bold choice because he had really just been known...
He's a comedy guy.
...for Taxi. Right, yeah. Comedy guy. He knows for Taxi and his small role in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. This is a year before Back to the Future comes out.
Right.
So to put Christopher Lloyd in it, it's kind of like a weird choice. But he does a... He's Christopher Lloyding it up. He's wild in it. But again, it feels like he's chasing the movie around. Like, the movie's happening without him. And he's like, hey, movie, come back.
Right, he's off doing something else and just happens to segue into this movie.
Yeah, he keeps trying to, like, get involved in the movie. Like, the movie is them trying to get Spock's body and then David and Savak on the planet. And then he's like, oh, I'm involved too now.
Yeah, that's like In Generations, there's a Klingon subplot that just feels like it's fucking shoehorned in.
Right, right.
But they steal Geordi's visor.
And right, because what we know about this guy is we know that, which this is, I guess, a thread that continues until the last of the movies, right? That the Klingons and the Federation are trying to make some kind of peace. Because he's like an off... He doesn't want peace. So he's like an offshoot...
Right.
Of
right.
And he wants to steal. They're
all technically at war.
Right.
And
it's a cold war. Yeah.
Right. And the only big thing in this movie that I think comes into play, that smartly comes into play later, is the fact that he does kill Kirk's son, because that's a big part of Six.
It's where Kirk makes Kirk really racist against Klingons.
Right.
They killed my boy. By the way, I guess we'll get to this when we get to this movie. Kim Cattrall's character in Six was originally Savick.
Yeah.
How great would it have been if we had been with her this whole time and she was the bad guy? Because she ends up...
She's like a double agent.
Yeah. But Nicholas Meyer couldn't get Kirstie Alley, and he was like, fuck it, if we can't get Kirstie Alley, which really sucks to the second person who played her, because it's like, let her do it.
Yeah, it's like, she was in two movies. Kirstie Alley was only
has
one.
She has a small little piece in Four. So they rewrite it as this other character, but it would have been so interesting if she was always this double agent. But they don't do that. So so what's going on the planet is, sorry, this goes back to the show. So every 7 years, Vulcans get so horny they could die.
Yeah.
Basically. They have to mate. They go into
they have to do the pond far.
Yes. And for reasons I've never understood, they can't just jerk off or something. They have to have sex, or they could literally die. Mm-hmm. So, as I said in the last episode, I'll say it again. In the last movie, part two, Spock, as the teacher at the academy, is grooming young Savick. But in this movie, as he's a young man in his teenage years,
an adult.
Right. He's going through Pon Farr, so he's in pain and he's screaming.
She's like, oh, well, maybe I could take care of that.
She fucks him. And you don't see sex, but you see her go up to him. You see her touch him. The next time we see them, they're like cuddling. It's very clear that she fucks.
Yeah.
So it's weird on a lot of levels. One, it's weird because we're going to say she's, what, 30? And he's like 16 or whatever. Yeah. So that's weird. It's also like the reincarnation of her old man mentor.
Yeah. And this person, for all intents and purposes, you could make the argument, is mentally disabled.
Right. And also, this character was meant to be the replacement of Spock and is now just gonna fuck him and bring him back to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
canceled.
I know.
Sorry, Search for Spock.
It's funny. That's the thing that they would glom onto now. They'd be like, oh, I can't believe she, you know, he's only 16 or whatever. But you're right. He's only really been alive like a day. So he's real fresh off the turnip truck. David, what does David do in this movie?
David kind of does nothing in this movie, to be honest.
You're right. He admits that he fucked up on Genesis. And then I guess to pay penance, he dies.
He's used his collateral damage when Christopher Lloyd wants to basically, like, hold something over Kirk.
Right. Lloyd goes down to the planet. He's got the three of them.
Kill one of them.
Yeah, and they're like, kill whatever one. And then the Klingon on the surface is going to kill Savick.
He jumps in the way.
To save her, and then he gets stabbed and died. Very kind of unceremoniously, he just dies.
Yeah, and I guess the idea was, like, oh, he does a heroic thing that like his dad maybe wouldn't right. have done, like.
But you don't even, it's kind of off screen because you see them tussle and then you hear it from another point of view. You don't see it go in. You don't see the knife go in him. You don't see his last breath. It's not like a big death scene.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's not a big death scene. It's like, it's almost like Nimoy and Harv Bennett were like, we don't like this whole Kirk has a son angle.
How do we get rid
like,
of this?
Yeah, but like we got to put him in this movie. How do we just get him out of here real quick?
Right. Exactly. And then Shatner does.
You know what? I kind of just realized it.
Yeah.
This whole movie is basically them doing cleanup for the next movie, where it's like, we don't like. We want to do this other movie where we go back in time, but like, we got to bring Spock back first, and we got to reintroduce the Klingons for the sixth movie, and then we got to do this. Like,
But also they're setting up the next one, but they're also trying to undo some of the things they did in two.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of these new young characters. Like, they were going to pass the torch, and then, like, nah, let's not pass that torch.
Yeah.
So, William Shatner does some terrible acting. His reaction to his son's death is so over the top. And really, I'm not going to tell Leonard Nimoy how to direct a movie. But what he should have done was let him have that take and then softly try to bring him down a little bit. You know, obviously Shatner's hard to work with. He's got a big ego, but it seems like Leonard Nimoy was good at dealing with him.
Yeah.
He should have tried to get more different takes out of him. Unless this is the best he got, which is bad.
I mean, I shouldn't say.
Cause it's so over the top.
I was just about to say something. Well, you know, well, fuck it. I'll just say it here and then you can cut it out.
Sure.
What was worse, his reaction to his son's death or his wife's death?
I'm not going to cut that out. I don't care. Let them cancel you. No, but what's funny is the reaction to his wife's death, what it was criticized for is he seemed unaffected entirely.
Yeah.
If you don't know, William Shatner had his second wife passed away. She drowned in a pool. And to this day, people think maybe he killed her. Anyways, so he improvises that. He like falls and then he says, bastards, Klingon bastards killed my boy. And he says it three times, which is not the way human beings act. That's to me, that rings of you improv the line and you don't know what to do next. So you just keep saying the improv line.
Like, no one's telling you to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No one's telling him
Klingon
to stop.
Bastards.
Right. So it's what could be a great scene. Again, like I said, in two, the end of two, when Spock dies, I think he does a great subtle
job.
Or
even just like when he yells Khan.
Right.
Like, he gets mileage out of that, and he's emotional. Like, why can't he do something similar? Right. Like, my boy!
Right.
Like, something.
But what's funny is people forget the context of they're setting Khan up into. So when he does the famous Khan, he's kind
That's
of
the
acting.
Reveal. Yeah.
But he's kind of acting. He knows he's not as fucked as he wants Khan to think he is.
Right.
But anyway, that was last week's episode. So, now his son is dead, and it's sort of one of these things of, like, we hardly knew ye. Like, how do I, the audience, give a shit? First of all, he was kind of, we've talked about this in the last episode, he kind of sucked as a character. He was a wimpy, he was complainy, he was kind of a little brat. He had
none of the charm and bravado of his father.
None of his father's charisma. and then he's barely in it, and then in this he has nothing to do, really. And then he's dead, and it's not even like he raised him. Like, he's really only been in his life for like 6 months.
And people can tell when you do the, like, oh, we've got a new, like, son character, daughter character that, like, doesn't quite work. Like,
right.
People know.
Right, right.
Because they're doing the same thing or a similar thing in Picard right now, where it's revealed he's got a son.
Picard has a son?
Yeah.
Okay.
But his son is, like, super charismatic to the point where people are like, oh, once the season of Picard ends, like, if you do a new series, like, he should be the lead.
Okay. You know what? They should have recast him. No offense to the actor who played him. And I'm sure it's the writing, too. They don't give him much to do. But he's just this...
He's kind of a Ralph mouth. He's kind of a mush.
He's got curly blonde hair. You can't trust a grown man with hair that blonde.
And where's Carol Marcus in this movie?
She's completely not there, and her involvement in creating Genesis is very diminished. In this movie, it's almost like he does it all himself.
Yeah.
Did she know about the proto material?
I don't. Is who she, knows? We'll never know.
Is this on her as well? Yeah. So, this is something fun. This is something I like. There's a Klingon dog.
Oh, yes, there is.
Imagine a dog that's a Klingon.
Yeah.
And he's a puppet. And it looks like a puppet. It could have been lit better.
Right.
But Christopher Lloyd's always petting it. And then at some point it dies, which is very sad.
Right. That's the saddest. That's sadder than Kirk's son.
I felt that more.
Yeah.
I had that puppet had more charisma.
Yeah. Oh, his pet Targ dying is way sadder than fucking
right.
Mush face.
So yeah, he wants again. There's so much repetition in the villain because it's like he wants the Gemini, like he
wants it.
Right.
We're not gonna give it to you. Right. Okay. Well, then we're gonna take it from you.
And also, it's like when
now we're gonna blow up the ship.
Right. And when they say the Gemini, it's very weird because what we're talking about is the data, like the blueprint of how to make it. And in this movie, it's as if Christopher Lloyd's character doesn't think at all about the fact that it creates life. He just right. keeps calling it like the most destructive weapon. And it's like, yeah, but you know, like that's just the first part. And right. then it it's as if he doesn't understand any potential in what it's supposed to do. And also when he gets to the planet and it's, you know, obviously like crumbling around him, even David's character says, you know, he's not going to kill us. Genesis failed. And he's like, ah, right. don't believe your young friend. And it's like, no, he just told you the thing you want is not good. Yeah, it's almost like Christopher Lloyd's in a whole different movie.
Yeah, and then he sends people onto the ship, and they're like, okay, we're going to blow up the ship then.
Yeah, that's kind of dramatic.
Then they kind of run to the finale.
Right,
where it's they're like, all okay, on the surface. They're all on the planet.
Yeah.
Then they go, then they have the fist fight.
Yes, yes.
And then now they're on the Enterprise.
Well, we should say they try to make a big dramatic moment out of self-destructing the Enterprise.
Right.
They get in a kind of like we've seen a lot, and kind of like in 2, we have this scene of them, two ships dealing with one another, mm-hmm. and Kirk is kind of put in a no-win scenario, going back to the last movie, and he has to give up the ship. So he figures out how to make it a no-win scenario by... setting the auto-destruct, right. self-destruct sequence that's counting down. By the way, Klingons, not very bright if they can't figure out that someone counting down is probably
right.
something
they
bad.
They took way too long to figure that out. Yeah. They're like, wait, what's that counting down?
Right. Christopher Lloyd's on his ship, and then the Klingon's like, oh, there's no one here, but the computer is speaking. And Christopher Lloyd's like, what's the computer saying? Let me see. And then the computer's like, 5, 4. And then Christopher's like,
get out
of there! Yeah. Marty! Get out of there! And then they die.
And now
the dumbest Klingons ever.
Yeah, and now where we've left off, obviously Spock comes back.
Right, we have horrible special effect where like...
That was not great.
One of the kids... suddenly has like a Leonard Nimoy Party City mask that's like growing on him.
Yeah.
He conveniently grows to exactly the age he was when we last met him.
Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy age.
He's a little discombobulated, but now they don't have the Enterprise. So now they use the Klingon ship, which is the Bounty.
Right.
And now they're going to, as we find out in the next movie, that's what they're going to use to go back.
Right.
To the 1980s. Right.
Is this the first time we see cloaking in Star Trek?
Because
they make a big deal out of the Klingon ship can cloak.
A cloaking device.
But also it teaches us the rules that you can't fire while it's on.
Right. I don't know. I'd have to... I don't know. It's not more like I'd have to go back and look at the...
That's fine. We make mistakes all the time. As a matter of fact, in our episode for Star Trek The Motion Picture, I... incorrectly said that was the last time we saw the character of Janice Rand, but she has a small, brief, little moment in this movie. She doesn't say anything, but we see her reacting to the ship coming in.
Yeah.
I want to say that's the last time we see that character, but maybe I'm wrong again.
I'm going to say
it's significant because she's a main character in season 1.
Yeah.
And then they write her off.
I think they bring her back for most of the movies, like just as like a...
Look, hey, she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still there. Which is funny because they do the whole Karl Marcus stuff. And it's like,
why not make it her?
Why not make it? You had her right there.
Right. Right. That
unless like
been
the
so
studio
smart.
Thought, oh, she's not attractive enough or like.
Right.
But she's, like, not she, for nothing. Like, Karl Marcus wasn't really like.
Maybe she's too close to his age. You know how Hollywood is. Oh, like, yeah. We can't have her be his age. I mean, supposedly the reason she was written out of the show after season one is that they kind of have a little bit of a romance and they wanted him to be single. Yeah. So he can hook up with the new chick every week.
Yeah.
So they got rid of her. And they bring in Chekhov. People realize Chekhov is not in season one. He's in season two. As a matter of fact, one of the big... Everyone knows this continuity error.
Yeah.
Is he was not there for the space seat episode. So him knowing Khan and Khan knowing him shouldn't make... It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, but...
Unless he's there and we don't see him.
Right, like that's always... Like people always bring that continuity error up.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm like, that's not really a continuity. Because, well, like, we could assume that he was there in the background.
But, it, like you just quoted, it feels like they're leaning into the continuity error by having him say, I never forget her face.
Right.
That's a very funny thing to say to a character that we know we've never seen. But, yeah. So, Kirk gets them to beam the rest of the crew back up to the the Klingon ship. So now it's just Spock, Krug, Christopher Lloyd, and Kirk on this dying planet. And they scuffle, and this is not very good. This is really awkward. You know, it's...
Because it's the exact opposite of what they did with two.
Right. There was always a stunt double. If you watch the original series, whenever like Kirk got into his crazy moves, it was always clearly a stunt double.
Yeah.
But in this, it's just like he's older, so it's like the stunt double really stands out, and you know they're fighting, and it's not great.
It's not.
And then the planet's breaking up, and then you know the planet breaks, and he's like the Klingon is like holding on to the edge,
kicks him into a lava pit.
Yeah, he fucking Palpatines him. He's like, I've had enough of you, and he kicks him. And that's it for Christopher. That's a wrap on Christopher Lloyd in this movie. And we go back. What happens? We go back to the ship. Oh, there's a funny moment with the Klingon who's like, because they're all about honor. He's like, kill me. Don't take me prisoner. And he's like, okay, I'll kill you later. And then later on, he's like, you said you'd kill me. And he's like, I lied. That's maybe the funniest moment in it.
Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about funny moments, let's talk about funny moments that don't work. There's a couple of characters in this movie that are straight supposed to be comedy. So one is when they're going to, they have to get, Bones gets arrested and put in the loony bin because he's got Spock in his brain. So to get Bones out, Sulu and Kirk go into wherever they're keeping him. And Kirk goes into the room where Bones is. And Sulu's out with, like, this officer. And by the way, this is Sulu. He's, like, the helmsman of the most important ship. How does this officer not know him? But then Sulu, like, kind of makes a not that offensive joke. Like, the guy yawns. And Sulu's like, oh, are they keeping you busy? And then the guy stands up and he's like, listen, don't mess with me, Tiny.
Yeah.
And it's like, his performance is so, like, he's like, this is my big comedic moment. And it's just really bad. There's a couple performances like that. There's... The scene that gets Bones arrested is a parody of the cantina scene in Star Wars? It almost feels like that.
I could see that. Because
the guy's talking like Yoda, too. He's talking backwards.
Yeah.
And that guy's a shitty character. The tone is
there's
all over
the place.
There's
a little tonal whiplash in this movie.
Yeah. And then there's the other guy who was working with Uhura, who she's like, go in the closet. That's another joke that just... duds.
Well, that's this movie. That's Search for Spock.
It's a whole lot of
it's a lot of like there's a couple good ideas, but again, it just feels like we're kind of resetting the table and that this is more an epilogue than anything to two than like its own standalone like big adventure with these characters.
Right.
Which must have sucked for the people at the time, because now it's just like one movie in this series.
Right, the next one's
and
good.
We can see, and we can also, it gets a little more points added to it because we can see where it concludes, where it's like this is part two of a trilogy story.
Right, right, right.
But at the time, if you didn't know that.
Right, it must have been very disappointing.
Very disappointing, and like now you've got to wait 2 more years for another movie.
Right, right. Yeah, and if you ever watch the Toys That Made Us episode on Star Trek toys, they always bet on the wrong horse. There were no toys for Wrath of Khan, but they made a ton of toys
for Search of Spock.
And nobody wanted the David Marcus figure.
No.
That'd be so funny if, like, you went into someone's office and that he had that.
God, like Star Trek character.
Like, you went into, like, a dentist's office and he's just, like, behind glasses, a little David Marcus. And he's like,
You like my David Marcus?
Yeah, that's an original from...
Like, what was that? You went to Neiman Marcus? No, it's David Marcus.
That's from 19... I got that at Toys R Us in 1984. That's an original David Marcus. You know, he's my favorite character.
That reminds me, you used to go into a dentist's office and they have that. Have you ever seen the documentary Trekkies?
Yes.
That's one that maybe we should watch for the pod.
Yes, tell the audience, if they don't know, tell the audience about this documentary.
Basically, it's a documentary made in like 1997.
Pretty famous.
Yeah, where it I'm not going to say it pulled the curtain back on Trekkies, but it kind of did, where it was like, here's the, like, you've heard that Star Trek is a cult thing.
Yeah.
Here's us, like, showing you the, like, real hardcore fans.
Right.
And it's like... all the convention footage, and then like all the people, they find all these weird characters that like have Star Trek sort of prominently in their lives. Like, there's a woman who's like running for
right.
her local like mayor or something,
yeah.
and she just wears the Starfleet uniform out
right.
all over.
Right.
And they have like a dentist who's like the Star Trek dentist.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
his whole gimmick is that you go to his office, and it's just got tons of Star Trek memorabilia.
Right.
And he's wearing a Starfleet uniform right. while he's doing yeah. your teeth.
Then there's the guy who turns his whole house into a ship.
Yeah, he turns it like a replica of the bridge.
Yeah. It's an interesting documentary because it... We should do it on the pod. But if I'm remembering correctly, it kind of tries to walk the line between, haha, look at these weird people, and, oh, isn't this good?
Right, it does. I think that's what made it so popular, is that it does kind of walk that line.
Well, it's one of the first, I mean, fan culture has always been around, but it's one of the first, like...
It's like the documentary
right,
on
right.
like, fan culture.
It kind of brings fan culture into the public sphere. You know what I mean? Like, people, right. like now everyone knows that Klingon's a real language and that some people's lives are completely devoted to these things.
Well, and also, it was the perfect time for that documentary. Because it was, you had the early internet where people
yeah.
were connecting, but it wasn't like it is today. So if you wanted to be a fan of something,
yeah.
you almost had to throw yourself
yeah.
into all of it, because the places where you throw yourself into all of it are where the other fans were.
Yes.
Like, those were the beacons. If you didn't have if you didn't know where to look,
right.
you just weren't finding people who liked the thing you like.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, you know, I could go on Twitter right now, look up a hashtag for the last episode of Picard, and find, you know, 10,000 people who are talking about it, that I could be like, oh, yeah, you check this out, so watch this too, blah, blah, blah. And you can make a connect. You could potentially make a connection with some people.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this up, because there's something I've been ruminating about and thinking about, how can I incorporate these ideas into this podcast. But I might as well bring it up now, because it's germane to this conversation. I've been thinking about how... But we have now, like, this corporate nerd culture, meaning it's like a manufactured nerd culture.
Yeah, like
the
everybody
Marvel
gets
movies.
Excited for the D20 conference.
Right, right, right. And, like, everyone, but it's like everyone sees the Marvel movies. Everybody sees the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
But to me, and tell me if you agree with this concept I'm going to float by you. I think part of the DNA of true cultures like this has to be some alienation, which you don't have now. It's not like, oh, you like Marvel? What a nerd. Oh, you like Game of Thrones? What a nerd. It's all like, oh, you're cool. Everyone likes these things. Whereas, like, you look at old nerd culture, like Trekkies, or even like otaku culture in Japan.
And it would be, you would have something on your desk
yeah.
that you wouldn't talk about but would be there. And if I walked up, I'd go... Oh, that's a Batleth.
Yes,
like
yes.
Klingon code. And then we strike up a conversation and be like, oh, okay, this guy gets it.
Right. And there is something self...
Now it's like you've got Captain America over here. It's like, who the fuck cares? Like, everyone's watching the Captain America movie. Like.
Right, right. There's something self-deprecating about it, too. Because it's like, yeah, I'm a nerd, and, you know, yeah, no one wants to date me. I'm not saying that we should, you know, look, I'm glad that everyone can like what they like now, and that people don't get beat up for liking Spider-Man now. I'm not saying we should go back into, like, those dark times. But I'm saying, like, to me, the problem is the corporatization.
I was going to say, I think capitalism, your problem is that there's a corporatized, sort of homogenized.
They took this thing that was, like you said, this like badge that some people had and said, you know what? We made every good novel into a movie. In the 1990s, we made every old TV show into a movie. Now what can we do to make movies? Comic books. We'll go in and take everything. That's the next thing we'll pilfer.
Yeah.
And it becomes mainstream culture. You know, it's like, but here's the thing that annoys me. It still pretends like it's not. Like, do you ever see that Amy Schumer sketch where Amy Schumer is on like a talk show and she's got a Star Wars t-shirt and she's like, I'm kind of nerdy. I don't know. I like Star Wars. And then like somebody they shoot cum on her. Like the nerds in the audience are so excited that she likes Star Wars. Like, it's not niche to like Star Wars, is the joke. It's not niche to like Marvel. It's not, liking Marvel now is not like liking Marvel in the past. And I'm not saying we should go back into being picked on and stuff. But the fact that they act like, okay, I'm working my way through this, so let me articulate it as best I can. They are selling it to us as if it is counterculture when it's culture. It's mainstream dollar sign culture, but it still has on it the little patina of cool counterculture when it's not that at all anymore.
No, well, I agree, but I also think that there's layers to it.
Sure, yeah.
Where there are some things that are more big mainstream culture than others. But
sure.
Let's take Marvel for a second. So there are people that are like really into the MCU.
Yeah.
But then there are people sort of on another layer, sort of deeper than that, that go to comic book shops, read the actual comics, and like those people are still like out there.
Right. And the MCU does not cater to those people at all. They're very separate worlds.
That's the thing. I think there's more segregation.
But here's what I'm saying. Like, Endgame was the most popular movie of all time, right? Somehow they've sold it to those people that, you guys are just nerds. Like, somehow, like, they still get to pat themselves on the back of, like, I'm not the norm.
Right.
It's like, you are the
traditional
norm.
Just to use a stereotype, like, the jock.
Right.
Is walking around going, like, well, I'm into some nerdy stuff. I'm into
Or, like, for females being like, I'm not like the other girls. I like Marvel. It's like, oh, you like the most popular thing ever?
Right.
Wow.
Right. You would be more nerdy if you were like, hey, you know what I love? Fucking Skinamarink, or like,
I fucking love Skinamarink, and
or like, you know, I saw this weekend After Sunset. Like, you'd be nerd,
right? Right? No, now to be counter is almost these people who you're counterculture if you're like, hey, you know what? I want to see movies about grown ups and grown up situations. Like, that's like, whoa, what are you saying? Who's but what kind of powers do they have?
Yeah,
it's like, no powers, just sadness. Anyway, this has been Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. I'm Mike Bajorno. I was joined by my number one, Mr. Vin Forte. We end every episode by saying
bye-bye.